So we're in the middle of the 8-verse mind training. Lojong, said last week, means literally mind training or mind practice or something like that. But Geshe-la reiterated in this class that it really has to do with developing the good heart. The mind we're talking about is the mind, I think, of bodhicitta. And the jhang part is to develop or to make pure or something like that, to practice. So developing the pure heart, so good heart is a really good translation for that. And this is course 14. It comes after course 13, which is the course on logic, which is a very long and difficult course in the ACI project. There's only one left to go in the 15 ACI courses. And if you think about it, we spent all this time in the ACI courses building an idea that there's something beyond what we normally see, that there's a different way to act. And then we talk about karma, you know, that, I mean, it starts off, lelejitta natsokye. Everything we experience comes from things that we've done. And then we go through Diamond Cutter, learning about emptiness in some detail. And those two courses, karma class and emptiness class, following each other, really indicate that karma and emptiness go hand in hand. That you really can't tell anybody about karma unless you also tell them about emptiness. And you can't talk about emptiness to anybody unless you also talk about karma. Doesn't make sense. And then we started the Bodhisattva studies with Course 7. And in June, we're going to get Course 8 in Munich, which will talk about things, worlds, existences that we cannot perceive. And just because we don't perceive them doesn't mean they're not there. And then 10, 11, and 12 go through the Bodhisattva's way of life, where we're really talking about the six perfections, what a Bodhisattva does. And chapter 9 of Bodhisattva's way of life has to do with the wisdom. And course 12 is all about that, just that one chapter, where we're talking about wisdom, understanding. And then we get to logic. Where we're beginning to really examine how we understand things and how we can begin to understand things that we cannot see, that our senses do not perceive. And we do that through logic. And then we get to course 14. Geshe-la said, I think there's like 350 pages of text for course 13, the logic class. And for course 14, well, the first text we're studying is just 8 verses long. And course 4, we'll talk about a 4-line, 1-verse text. These Lojong texts are very short. And they really talk about the mind, you know. So, you know, in the first 13 courses, we're talking about how we change our behavior a lot, how we change what we do. We learn, you know, the 10 non-virtues and how to avoid them and how to do the opposite. For things like that. We talk a lot about not getting angry when the time comes. These are all about things that we're doing, you know, and kind of a daily life thing. It has to do a lot with lack of overweight, to learn to diet, you know, properly, things like that. We learn not to yell at people when they yell at us, and so on and so forth. You know, if we have an alcohol problem, we learn how to stop drinking. We learn how to stop smoking, maybe learn how to do that. Lojong has to do only with our thoughts. And this is much more difficult. And the 8-verse mind training is showing us how we are to think about other people. We are to view other people as higher than we are. Everybody around us is trying to teach us something. And this is just a logical outcome from everything else we've studied in the first 13 courses. And we're now applying it to our mind, to our thoughts. And now we get to verse 5 in the 8-verse mind training. This text by Diamond Lion, Dorje Senge, right? And it's a very difficult thing for us to learn how to do. Geshe-la said at the beginning of this class that this was the most difficult class of all that he'd taught before, the most difficult one to prepare for. So we're going to find out why. So we're going to do, I'm going to give it to the Tibetan for this verse. So to plant seeds for Tibetan. So repeat after me. Dakla.
Dakla.
Yes. Shengi.
Shengi.
Trakdoki.
Trakdoki.
Shekur.
Shekur.
Lasok.
Lasok.
Nirikpe.
Nirikpe.
That's the first two lines of the text. Dak, we did last week, we've done before, means I or me or something like that. La means to. It's like what we would call a preposition in English. So dakla is to me. Shen means others. And gi means by. It marks an agent, I guess. So shen gi would be by others. Tokdok means jealousy. And gi in this case means out of. Shekur means criticize, and lasok is and so forth, etc. And mi rikpa means undeserved or untrue. So this has to do, you know, other people, because they're jealous of me, will say bad things to me out of jealousy. Now, that's kind of a nice poetic translation. But this mirikpe means untrue. It means people are criticizing us for things that are not true about us. And they're doing that out of jealousy. So that sort of sets the tone. And then the next two lines sort of tell us what's going on. So say Gyeongka.
Gyeongka.
Rangi.
Rangi.
Lenpadang.
Lenpadang.
Gyeolka.
Gyeolka.
Shenla.
Shenla.
Bulwarsok.
Bulwarsok.
Now, Gyeongka means a loss. Like in a business sense, you could lose a contract or suffer a financial loss or something like that. It's Gyeongka is a loss, you know. Rang means myself, and Rangi means by myself. Lenpa means to take it, you know. Tang means and. Gyeolka is a nice word. It means profit. Shen, again, is others. La Shen La is two others. And then Bulwar Shok means Bulwa is to offer. And Shok is a really nice word in Tibetan. It's like the imperative sense, you know, do it. But here it's like may I. So Bulwar Shok means may I offer it. You know, Shok can be let it be that way, may it be that way, something like that. So when other people criticize me out of jealousy, you know, and they say bad things to me, they criticize me for things that I haven't done, you know, may I take the loss myself and offer the profit to others with great love and respect. Now, the key, you know, here is we have to analyze the things that happened to us. We have to figure out why what's going on is going on. So in the first couple of lines, you know, where it says, when other people criticize me out of jealousy, you know, we are looking at them, you know, something at work happens, for example, and people criticize you unjustly. And you figure out, okay, this is going on because so-and-so told so-and-so something else, and it got to my boss, and they said I did that, and my boss was critical of me because of what these other people said. You know, you might be able to figure this out, but that is the how, and it is not the why. The why is because you treated other people badly in the past. You've accused them of doing something they haven't done because you were jealous of them. But so the idea here is that we have to figure out where the bad things that happened to us come from. You know, it isn't the how we're worried about. It's the why. And when we do that, we gain wisdom. So we distinguish between the how and the why. The why is what we have to worry about. And when bad things happen to us, we understand that, oh, that's because I did something similar to somebody else in the past. And that was a bad act, and you're now reaping the results of it. And the people who were criticizing you now become reminders of the way you treated others in the past. And you are reaping the results for that. They are reminding you that you're only suffering now because you made somebody else suffer in the past. And you thank them then. Reminding you, yeah, that's right. That's because I did something else. Thank you very much for pointing that out to me. We're changing our mind. You know, we're not trying to change the behavior of somebody else. Or really saying, okay, that was because, but we're now changing our view of the people who are reminding us, you know, of the bad things we've done in the past. And they become our teachers. They become very valuable to us. We look at them in a different light. And because we are suffering from being criticized in the moment, we now accept that. We take the loss on ourselves. And we give the profit to the other people. We say, you're absolutely right. You know, I shouldn't have done that. Thank you for pointing it out to me. You know, so the profit is sort of what they get out of it. What they get is our love and respect. They may not know that, but that's what we're doing. We have to figure out why this is going on. You know, and this is the real goal of Buddhism, is to begin to understand why things happen to us the way they do, and then to view the people who cause us to become aware of the bad results that come from treating other people badly, to view them, to love them, really, you know, to try to give them everything that we can, to give them all of the gain. This is changing our mind. Now, the first homework question on your homework, it says, whose fault is the current protector controversy, and how could it be stopped? This class was given in 1998, and His Holiness had come to New York to teach. And there were demonstrators out in front of the place where he was giving his teachings, accusing him of all kinds of bad things and stuff like that. And this was the result, and these were Buddhists who were doing the criticizing. And they were really loud and kind of nasty. And this had been going on at other places as well. The controversy had to do with a protector deity that His Holiness had advised people to stop practicing. There was a very high Geshe in England who decided to not obey His Holiness and was actually critical of him saying this. And the question was, where does this come from? You know, the how of what's going on, people saying bad things about His Holiness. And, you know, if you've heard His Holiness teach or been around Him, I maybe even had the good fortune to touch Him, you know. How could anybody be critical, say nasty things to this very holy being? What's the why? And the why is because we haven't treated our lamas properly in the past. So that's the only reason that we would be able to perceive His Holiness being criticized, or even teachers we have, you know, people criticizing them. It's because we haven't treated our lamas properly in the past. We haven't paid attention to them. We've been disrespectful of them. They become kind of normal to us. And now we see them being mistreated by others. We have to understand that. How do we stop that? By changing our attitude about our teachers, by being respectful of them, by honoring them continually. And now we change our mind. And we thank the people. We thank those demonstrators, for example, if we were to see them, for pointing that out to us. And this is the mind training. We're developing a good heart, you know, where we love everybody, where we love these people that we see doing things that we would not like them to do, to criticize us or to criticize people, our teachers, for example. Things like that. So if we don't like the way people are treating us, then we keep our vows perfectly, more perfectly. And if we do that, then we won't have to see people who criticize us or criticize our friends or our teachers. And this is the hardest teaching to follow. You know, Lama Marut says that when we become teachers, we raise our hypocrisy to even higher and higher levels. And, you know, when we begin our Buddhist practice, or really any religious practice, we know what we're supposed to do, and then we don't do it. And we're critical of others that we see doing things that we know are wrong, but maybe don't change our behavior. And here we're talking about our thoughts. You know, when we see people criticizing us or criticizing His Holiness, for example, this verse talks about they're doing it out of jealousy. We may understand that. But what we have to do now is to turn that back into looking at our own thoughts. You know, what are our thoughts about others? What are our thoughts about people who criticize us? We may know why they're not why. We may know why they're doing it, which is not the reason it's happening to us. It's not the why part, but it's the how. But what has that got to do with our changing our own thinking? And that's what the lojong, that's what developing the good heart is about, is applying that to the way we think about others or think about the world in general. So, you know, in any kind of controversy or competition or something, any kind of problem that occurs between two people, we decide to take the loss on ourselves, you know, or the disadvantage. We take it upon ourselves, and we give the advantage to other people. Now, we might say, well, then you become kind of a doormat, you know, for anybody else's hostility or whatever. People begin to take advantage of us. Well, they're already doing that because of what we're looking at. In the past, we have simply tried to fight back. And that hasn't done us a bit of good because look where we are right now after untold lifetimes before. We have to change what we do. We have to change what we, the way we think about other people. We have to do the opposite. So we take the loss on ourselves rather than trying to prevent ourselves from losing something. We give other people the gain. Consciously, out of love, we do that. And that is the doing the opposite thing. And by doing that, we will change our karma drastically. And the kind of people who take advantage of us will disappear from our lives. They will no longer be there. So the best way, you know, that we can have to get rid of people we don't like around us is to really serve them. A friend of mine in California was telling me there was a, I guess she's still around, an FPMT nun who's kind of, we might call, the English word is ditzy, sort of unfocused and everywhere, you know, and says things that you can't quite figure out. And this nun was staying with this woman. The woman invited her to stay. And this particular nun could be kind of demanding. She'd come to you and say, I need this, you know, I need that. Every 5 minutes she'd come and say that. And my friend was sort of taken aback by that because she was wanting kind of worldly things. But she knew that she needed to take care of the Sangha, ordained people, you know, so she did whatever this person wanted, got her whatever she wanted. And my friend said, 3 days later, the demands disappeared. They just didn't occur anymore. And that's because she had understood, you know, what was going on, and just served, you know, this nun, gave the nun the profit, you know, what she wanted, took the loss upon herself, which was basically becoming a servant. I think that was what her perception had been. So we have to keep our vows perfectly, you know. We have to treat other people the way they would like to be treated. We don't get what we want by struggling against other people. It just doesn't work. We don't keep things for ourselves by not giving them to others. It doesn't work that way. The approach we've taken so far just hasn't worked. Now, we're bodhisattvas. You know, if you've taken bodhisattva vows, I think you all have, you've sworn to serve other people. We have sworn to offer everybody else our happiness. Whatever they need, we give without thinking about it. We just offer to them. And Master Shadi Davis says, you know, that this is the only way that we can be happy for ourselves. Every happiness has come from taking care of others. Every unhappiness comes from taking care of ourselves. You know, that's what he said. And that's the way we live our lives as bodhisattvas. We help others. You know, we try to prevent them from doing things that would harm themselves. We do that by teaching them. Sometimes we have to do it physically. We want to help others to stop collecting bad karma that will cause them suffering in the future. And, you know, we've taken it upon ourselves early on to stop doing things that generate bad karma for us. And sooner or later, we will get to a point where we can then unconditionally, immediately just give what we have to somebody who needs it, to somebody who asks for it, without even thinking about it. You know, we've talked about how we could give our eyeball to somebody if they wanted it, without even thinking about it. But it has to do with having the mindset that would do that. You know, and that's the hard part. But it's really it's really beautiful because, you know, that will provide us with happiness. When we are taking care of others, which is our goal, then we're happy because we're doing what we want to do. And that's take care of others. And that's what provides us our happiness. If our goal is to take care of others, then while we're doing that, we're happy. We're doing what we want to do. It's changing our mind to understand, you know, that that's the road to happiness. That's the difficult part. Now, in the we talked about Chunky Rinpoche last class. He has a commentary on what these lojongs are. You know, and he says in his commentary that we have to have two attitudes when we take this loss onto ourselves. The first attitude is that we must enjoy it. You know, we must have a good time. We realize that this act of taking the loss onto ourselves, you know, is going to get us to our Buddha paradise. If we do this over and over and over, that generates the causes for our Buddha paradise. So that's the first attitude we have to have. The second one is that we can't have any regrets about doing that, either now or in the future. You know, so if our mind ever questions about what we're doing, you know, we just tell our mind to be quiet. You know, when somebody's yelling at us and we say, yep, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry, you know. Please forgive me. Something like that, you know. Then if you think, oh, I shouldn't do that, they're going to just criticize me more and more. That's regret of having done a good thing. And when that pops up in your mind, you say, mind, be quiet. You know, I know what I'm doing. It's going to be good for us. So just shut up and go along for the ride. Chanki Rinpoche says that having regrets destroys the virtue that we collected by taking the loss to ourselves. Verse 6. Repeat after me. Gangla.
Gangla.
Daki.
Daki.
Pentakpe.
Pentakpe.
Rewa.
Rewa.
Chewa.
Chewa.
Gangshiki.
Gangshiki.
Shintu Mivik.
Shintu Mirik.
Nuje.
Nuje.
Naan.
Naan.
Shenyen.
Shenyen.
Dampak. Dampar.
Dampar.
Tawar.
Tawar.
Shok.
Shok.
Yeah. So, Gangla. Gong means anybody or anything it can mean, but here it's anybody. La means two. Dak again is me. Daki is by me. Pen means help in this case. Means benefit often. And takpe it means they will. Rewa means hope. Che means great. Chewa means great. And gangshik means and they. So these first two lines, if I turn to another person with great hopes, they will help me. And now here comes the punchline. Shintu, we've had before, means really or very. Mirik is the same as the previous verse. It means unjustified. Nujay means harm. And it means great harm, really. So, Shintu Mirik Nujay is really unjustified harm. They're doing things to me unjustified, you know, really bad. Shenyen is spiritual friend. Dampar means highest. Tawar Shok means may I see them as. So then the second two lines are, I turn to another person with great hope that they'll help me, and they unjustly hurt me badly. When that happens, may I see them as my highest spiritual friend, as my Lama. In our lives, we practice Dharma. Our job or our family are great laboratories for practicing Dharma. Our co-workers, our family members, whatever, are great teachers for us. And this, when things get really bad for us, and we finally reach the point where we turn to somebody for help, in the hopes that they will help us in some way, meaning we've made ourselves very vulnerable, and we go to them, and what they do instead is to hurt us even more, then we've got to see them as great spiritual friends, as teachers. Why? Because the reason that this has happened to us is because we have hurt people who've asked us for help in the past, or we've not helped them in some way. And by this happening to us now, these people are reminding us that we've done this in the past. So we now view them as great teachers for us. They're spiritual friends. They're guides for us. And we thank them and we love them for doing that for us. And again, this is a difficult thing to do. We can learn to put up with something, with gritted teeth maybe. But actually developing the good heart to rejoice when something like that happens, and people point out the things that we've done wrong in the past and viewing them as valuable to us, you know, as friends. Having a mind to do that is a great accomplishment. And what we do now, the mind training part, is that when these bad things happen to us, is to actually change our mind and say, ah, right, thank you so much. You're taking care of me. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Verse 7. Repeat after me. Dorna.
Dorna.
Ngudong.
Ngudong.
Gyupayi.
Gyupayi.
Pen.
Pen.
De.
De.
Manam.
Manam.
Kunla.
Kunla.
Bul.
Bul.
Mayenu.
Mayenu.
Dang.
Dang.
Dungel.
Dungel.
Kun.
Kun.
Sangwe.
Sangwe.
Dakla.
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 Lenparshok.
Lenparshok.
Dorna means in brief. So Diamond Lion here is sort of summarizing the first six verses. At least he's telling us he's going to do that. Dong means and. Gyupa, sorry, ngu means directly. And gyupa yi means indirectly. So ngu dong gyupa yi means directly and indirectly. Pen again means help. Day here means happiness. It's the same word as Dalam, which is path to bliss or path to happiness. Ma means ma, mother. Manam means my mother's, plural. Bul means to give, and Kunla means to all, right? So he starts off by saying, in brief, you know, may I give help and happiness to all my mothers, meaning all living beings, right? Directly and indirectly. Those are the first two lines of this verse. Ma yi nu means all of their bad deeds. Dong means and nungel means suffering. So all their bad deeds and all their suffering. Sangwe means secretly. Dakla is to me. Lenparshok means may I take it upon myself. So the second two lines then are, may I take it on myself secretly, all of their bad deeds and suffering. So, you know, what Diamond Lion says, these first six verses here sort of mean any time somebody is going to get hurt or somebody is going to hurt somebody else, I want it to happen to me instead. I'll take it upon myself, right? And I'll do that secretly. So that they don't know about it. I'm not going to brag about it. I'm not going to tell anybody about it. It's not important to me whether anybody else know about it or anything like that. In the office, if you see something bad developing, you try to take it upon yourself instead. If somebody's going to get yelled at for doing something wrong and it's going to be unjust, you sort of step in and say, well, that was my fault, you know. So you take the blame yourself in that case. Or you sort of arrange it that the blame falls upon you. And you don't tell anybody that you did that to help them, right? And we're doing this Because everything bad, even the things that we see bad happening to somebody else, are projections of our own bad karma. And we want to clean that up as well. So when things are about to go bad for somebody else, we do what we can to take their suffering upon ourselves instead. A very good thing. There's a young man here. I've known him for like 10 years, something like that. And he's 25 now, I think. And in the last couple of months, 3 or 4 months, it started off with he's a martial artist. And he does a lot of practicing with students. And he got knocked in the jaw or something like that with an elbow misdirected. And it began to hurt him. And all of this physical pain began to develop. And he went to doctors, and most doctors wouldn't even see him. He had sinus problems. He had ear problems. He had jaw problems. He had throat problems. And he got some medication, and his body began to hurt as well. He wrote a letter to his friends, you know, sort of explaining what had been going on. And, you know, 24/7 headaches, things like that. He said he got pain in his groin, area. It was like somebody was kicking his testicles continually. And no particular reason why, medically, right? And he was reflecting on this, you know, to us. And he's been in agony. I mean, absolute agony. And outwardly, he appears physically robust. He hasn't lost any weight. He has no physical signs of any, you know, outward physical signs of anything wrong. But he's been going through this torment. And he knows enough to understand, you know, that he's trying to accept the suffering of others. And understand that's only happening because of the way he's treated others in the past. Now, he's really struggling with that, and that was one of the purposes of his letter to his friends. But that's the kind of thing we're talking about. We have to change our minds to understand that the suffering that we experience and the suffering that we see other people experience is simply due to the way that we treated other people in the past. And if we can change our mind to understand that and be happy when bad things happen to us or we see bad things happening to others, understanding, you know, that we are now generating the causes for our Buddha paradise, this is a very important thing for us. Now, there are two words here, directly and indirectly. The directly part has to do with trying to take other people's suffering upon ourselves, you know. And we do this in the office place. We do it with our families, you know, whatever. That's the direct part. And we do it, you know, we try to fix things for other people. We do it quietly. We do it in secret, meaning that we don't brag about it. We don't let other people know what we're really doing, right? The indirect part refers to Tonglen practice. In Tonglen, you may know or may not know, but it's where you visualize everybody else's problems coming to you you take them on yourself, and you do it with the breath, with your breath. And as their problems, their suffering come into you and come into your heart, they mingle with the goodness in your heart, and there's a big flash which vaporizes those sufferings. You've taken them into yourself, and that flash makes them go away, but it doesn't just make them go away. It gives you happiness as well. And then you return that happiness on the breath going out towards the other people, giving them your happiness. And this is a really powerful practice. And you do it on the breath. You know, when you're learning to do it, it takes several breaths to do this, and you may bring the suffering into you and let it sort of hover in front of you as a big black mass, and then you take it into your heart and let it go boom, you know, like a nuclear explosion, and then send it back. But the practice is that as you are sitting on your cushion in this meditation, doing it in your natural breathing process, you know, your inhalation just brings the suffering in the form of black smoke from everybody else in the world into you. It vaporizes, and as you breathe out in white light, white smoke goes out, which is your happiness out to them. And as you breathe, you're just doing this practicing. Tonglen. Tong means to take, and Len means to give. So that's the indirect part. Now, it's very important that you do this indirect part when you're sick, for example, or at the moment of your death. And you can also do it when you're having a really bad time. You know, something comes up, you're sort of at your wit's end, or the end of your rope, kind of say. Sit down and do this practice. Take other people's problems upon you. And, you know, when this sort of explosion happens in your heart, then your problems, as well as other people's problems, disappear. And they are transformed into happiness. This is a good, really good practice to do. So, verse 8. Repeat. Dedak.
Dedak.
Kungyang.
Kungyang.
Chugeki.
Chugeki.
Tokpe.
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 Dreame.
Dreame.
Babakpar.
Babakpar.
Chunyam.
Chunyam.
Gyumar.
Gyumar.
Shepayi.
Shepayi.
Shenpei.
Shenpei.
Chingwa.
Chingwa.
Lei.
Lei.
Julshok.
Julshok.
Right. Dedak means these or those. And what it refers to is these practices we've talked about in the first seven verses. Kunkyang means all of them. Chu means dharma. But here the meaning of dharma is ideas. And ge means eight. So tokpe means thoughts. Dreame means stain or pollution. And mabak means don't pollute. Don't pollute the pollutions. It's or don't pollute with pollutions is Dreame Mabak. What does it say? May none of this ever be made impure by the eight ideas of things. And he doesn't say what the eight ideas are. We're supposed to know that. And the eight ideas in the commentaries are one of two groups of eight. One group is either the eight worldly thoughts. Another group is eight ways of seeing things as self-existent. Diamond Lion here is telling us that when we're doing these things, we have to make sure that we don't pollute them, that we don't mess them up, meaning that we don't mess up the good karma that we're getting from doing them with the eight thoughts, which are either the eight worldly ideas or the eight ways of seeing things as self-existent. And he probably means both of those. So we're going to talk about what these eight thoughts are. You may have heard of them before. I don't know that I've taught them to you. But here they are. We're going to go through them now. So say, Jiten Chugye.
Jiten Chugye.
Yeah, Jiten means world, or world in this case. Chu, again, is Dharma. Here means having the connotation of thoughts. And Ge is eight. So the eight worldly thoughts, this is often translated as the eight worldly Dharma. And normally when we hear Dharma, we're talking about practices. But that's not what it is. It's the eight worldly thoughts. And these are eight ways of looking at things in a normal way. That's what the worldly idea means here. And what these eight worldly thoughts are is they're four pairs of opposites. So here's the first of the first pair. So say Nekur.
Nekur.
Jungna.
Jungna.
Na.
Ga.
Ga.
Nekur means something. Jung means to get or to arise or to appear, something like that. Na means if. So Jungna means if you get, and Nyekyur Jungna, if you get something. Ga means happy, to be happy. So this first of the eight worldly thoughts is being happy if you get something. Whether something can be like a car, a raise at work, a nice new CD, something like that. But it doesn't mean just being happy. It means being unreasonably happy. And it's being unreasonably happy about a worldly thing, meaning something having to do with the world. Not a nice realization, for example, or not going and hearing a nice inspiring Dharma talk or something like that, but something worldly, meaning something that's eventually going to disappear for you. That's the worldly part, the jikten, which, remember, it means the basis of destruction, the basis of rot. So this has to do with becoming overly excited about getting something you want, something really nice, Somebody gives you a piece of chocolate cake and you're deliriously happy, unreasonably happy. It doesn't mean about really enjoying that. It means cherishing it, seeing it normally, like as a piece of chocolate cake that gives you happiness from its own side. So, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't feel good about getting something. It doesn't mean that you should feel guilty when something good comes to you. Or that you shouldn't rejoice, over doing good things. This is being unreasonably happy when you get something, something normal, something that you see is normal. And then number two is the opposite of that. Say majunga.
Majunga.
Miga.
Miga.
Yeah. Majunga means if you don't get it. Miga means that you get upset. So being upset when you don't get something. Now, why is this important? If your practice is going well, then bad karma begins to ripen more and more for you in a lesser way than it would normally, meaning that it ripens kind of prematurely, like as a headache or somebody yelling at you, getting sick, something like that. So if you're practicing well, bad karma is going to ripen. And when that happens, we don't get upset about it because we understand what's going wrong. If we do get upset, that means that we're seeing what's happening to us as coming from its own side, you know, that it's out of our control. You know, and we don't want it, so we get upset about it. So that's the worldly part. So this first pair has to do with getting things or not getting things and being happy or unhappy, being happy when we get something we want, being unhappy when we get something we don't want or don't get something, right? And we have to understand now that we can't let these thoughts ruin our understanding that we're trying to develop, you know, of being grateful to people who do bad things to us or when bad things happen to us. You know, that these are done by people who are trying to teach us something, trying to remind us that the good things that are happening to us or the bad things that are happening to us are coming from things that we've done in the past and that we treat these people as teachers. And if we let this first pair, you know, of worldly thoughts enter into that practice that we're doing, then it destroys the virtue we get from doing that practice. Here's the second pair. Say, Deva.
Deva.
Junga.
Junga.
Ga.
Ga.
Day again is feeling good. So this is being happy if you feel good. And then it's opposite. Say, Ma Junga.
Majunga.
Miga.
Miga.
Yeah. Being unhappy if you don't feel good. You know, it's easy to have a pretty decent state of mind when you feel good. When, you know, feel physically good or you're happy, something like that. That's easy to do, but when we're practicing Dharma, we need to learn how to be loving with others, you know, how to respond to others with love, you know, with happiness, regardless of how we feel. It doesn't make any difference whether we feel good or whether we feel crappy. You know, if we're being good to somebody else, we ought to rejoice. We ought to feel good about that, regardless of what our sort of state of mind is at the time. So this being happy when we feel good means our happiness comes from thinking that the feeling good is coming from its own side, right? These two are linked. Now, being happy and feeling good might seem the same thing to us. And, you know, in some way it is. But what we need to understand is that we can be happy even if we don't feel good, right? And then the other one is being unhappy if we don't feel good. So if we're sick or we're really tired and we're unhappy about that because we don't understand that, you know, being sick or tired is simply the result of the way we treated others in the past. If that's the worldly view of it, you know, we're unhappy because we're sick. And we don't understand that being sick is coming from the way we treated others in the past, right? And so we're unhappy about that. The true Dharma practice would be to be happy about that, you know, regardless of how we feel. We feel bad. We've got a bad cold or the flu or something really serious. We get cancer, for example. The true Dharma practice is to be happy about that, to not let our emotion be tied to the conventional way of viewing something. So that's the second pair, you know, being happy or unhappy, dependent on whether we feel good or we feel bad. And here's the third pair. Repeat. Nyendak.
Nyendak.
Jungna.
Jungna.
Ga.
Ga.
Ga. A jungna.
A jungna.
Niga.
A jungna.
Niga.
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 Right. So, being happy if you become well-known, or being unhappy if you are not well-known. Again, you know, we have to understand where things are coming from. Our karma is relentless. You know, we will experience things depending on what we've done in the past. It's inevitable. If we've made people unhappy or caused them to suffer, we will be unhappy. We will suffer. If we've done good things for people to help them out, then we will have pleasant experiences. It's as simple as that. And this one has to do with, you know, being well known. Or not being well-known. The idea is that we shouldn't get too excited, you know, if all of a sudden we're known for something. You know, there's this thing around the office that people say, oh, do you know what he or she did? That was really neat, you know. They helped us get this contract or whatever. You know, just let it go right by. You shouldn't get really excited about that. You can rejoice about it. That's okay. But don't let it become normal. You always have to understand, why did that happen? It's because I did something good for others in the past. And the reverse is, you know, being unhappy when you're not well known. You know, and this would be something like you're unhappy because you don't have any friends, you know, nobody cares about you, something like that. You just don't exist, that kind of thing. We can't let our practice be polluted by those kinds of thoughts. Either way, we can't see things as normal. And finally, the fourth pair here, say, Chura Jungna.
Chura Jungna.
Chura Jungna. Ga.
Ga.
Ma Jungna.
Ma Jungna.
Ma Jungna.
Miga. Tungra is being praised. So this is being happy when you get praised, being unhappy if you don't get praised. The first one might have to do, you know, with being happy when you get praised for things you don't deserve, you know. And the unhappy part is being blamed for things you had nothing to do with. Again, this is looking at things in a normal way. That's the worldly part of the Dharma. You know, you get really happy when people say good things about you, unusually happy when people praise you for something. Especially if you didn't do or don't know what you did, you know. You know, oh, that's kind of neat, you know. You just sort of bask in that. Like thinking you really do deserve to be praised. And then being unhappy when you don't get the praise. Or when you get blamed maybe for something you didn't do. I remember the first year I was teaching, 2 days in a row, I got a letter from a parent really sort of taking me to task for criticizing her daughter. And it was a kind of a nasty letter, really. And I thought, well, you know, it wasn't that bad, number one, even though a girl apparently took it that way. And she had it coming, number two. And then the next day I got this letter from a mother saying, I can't thank you enough for what you did for Doug the other day, you know. He's been walking around really happy, you know, for 24 hours. I could not remember what I had done. You know, it was that kind of a thing. But I felt really good about it. And that's, you know, kind of seeing things in a normal way. You know, the being what I thought was unfairly criticized had nothing to do with whether I was critical of the girl or not. It had to do with my experience had to do with being critical of others in the past. And that was all. So we can't let these eight worldly dharma get in the way of our practice. If those pop up, we've got to tell them, our mind to shut up. Don't think about them at all, you know. Don't let them tarnish what good we've done in changing our mind, in developing this good heart. Now, we're going to cover the other set of eight, which is the eight ways of seeing things as self-existent. And if I prepared this a little bit more carefully, I would have realized that Geshe-la cut this class short because he was running out of time in a rented space, and they had to leave. So he taught them in the next class. They belong to this class. So I didn't prepare that part, and we will do it in the next class, finishing up the eighth verse of these of the eight-verse mind training. So if you have any questions, now is the time.
Venerable Phil, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
My experience with teaching Dharma is it's sometimes very hard to distinguish between happiness about what you did and pride about what you did. I think both feelings are closely related. I mean, if you are happy when you teach, how can you distinguish between happiness about what you did and what seeds you planted and whom you taught and how you helped them and pride about being such a good teacher or such a good person?
There are two flavors of pride, a good one and a bad one. Until we get to Tantra, the teachings of pride pride is not good. It's something to get rid of. Pride has to do with putting other people down. And there are seven ways to do that. I think we covered that someplace in a class before. But in the tantric view, the same word is Nagyal, right? Is divine pride. And that's a good thing. Divine pride has to do with, yeah, I can do this, you know, and I can do it well. Where you're not putting anybody else down. So if that's your experience when you're teaching, that's a good kind of pride. And pride, we normally think of pride as an emotion, but I think when we get to Nagyal is divine pride. It's sort of a more like a motivator, maybe.
Okay. Thank you.
You
bet.
Thank
you, Russell.
Anybody else? Okay.